Hello and welcome to the call. I'd appreciate it if everyone would kindly hit the 6 button on your phone so that we can mute all background noises. And that's everyone, of course, except our guest. And at the end, well, actually, this one we're going to do a little differently. We're going to do all questions and answers. And so when you want to ask a question, you'll have to push *6 to get so that we can hear you. So the format is simply that we're going to take questions because people may come on the call at different times throughout the hour. And then we also had people post questions in our forum community, and I am going to be asking those questions. Jennifer Campion who is our guest today, and she is the financial planning specialist at Smith Barney. And this is the second part of our series. Last week, Jennifer shared a lot of information that was specific to baby boomers and financial planning. And this week, we're just doing an hour of questions and answers. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Dotsie Bregel, and I'm founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which can be located at nabbw.com, and also boomerwomenspeak.com. And they are the number one sites on major search engines for baby boomer women. I'm passionate about educating and empowering women at midlife and spend a good portion of my time doing so. Our sites are proudly sponsored by Me Again Products, which are tried and true products for midlife women, and they can be located at meagainonline.com. And then we're also sponsored by SunSuite for those interested in natural digestive health solutions, and they can be located online at plumsmart.net. Okay, let's see. If you're on the call and you're not a member of the NABBW, we'd like to offer you the opportunity to join for $50, and you can email me at dots@nabbw.com, and I'll be happy to send you that link. It's a $25 savings. Okay, I'm just going to do a little intro for Jennifer because I think the people who registered for this call had also registered for last week's call for the most part. And I really just want to jump in to getting these questions answered. So, Jennifer, are you there?
I am here.
Good. Welcome. Jennifer is currently a financial advisor at Smith Barney, and she's been in the financial services industry since 1994. She's been featured in Baltimore Magazine, Women in Business. She's been interviewed for the Daily Record, and she's a contributing writer for Smart Woman Magazine with regards to financial intellect. Let's see. She is on several boards, local boards, including the National Breast and Ovarian Cancer Coalition. Her services include, and this is quite a list, but I will share them because she's licensed in 17 states and she offers quite a few services. Asset management, lending services, philanthropic services, estate planning, family consulting, alternative investments, corporate 529 plans, private banking, wealth management, corporate pension funds, financial planning, long-term care insurance, qualified plans, retirement planning, business succession planning, investment policy statements, and 401k rollovers. So, Jennifer, I know you do a lot of work with our generation. What do you find yourself doing the most during the past, say, 2 to 3 months?
The past 2 to 3 months, what I have found myself doing is going back to the clients and touching base. As an advisor, I think it's important to communicate with your clients, especially in these times. At this point, it's important for the clients to really reassess their financial plan and to reassess where they are as far as their net worth, meaning let's go back 3 years ago, and I think that most of us can safely say that we had an investment account that was worth more than it is today. We probably owned a home or maybe a few homes that were worth more than they are today. And all of those assets, when we look at our future, most of us add those assets in thinking how are they going to contribute to our income stream and our financial security in the future, in retirement, or even if we're in retirement, how that may have affected us if we've lost value in one or more of those areas. And so going back to the clients and having a conversation, finding what their income needs are, looking at where they stand as a total net worth, and a repair and rebuild strategy.
Very good. So your clients don't have to call you. You've been in touch with them.
Well, some do call, and I think it's only natural in these markets that they would reach out, but I've also been very proactive in the ones I have not heard from to send the list out, again, with their net worth plans. And most of them are calling for, what should I be doing right this second? It's more of an impulse call, if at all. And more or less just to answer some questions. But I would say that majority of the clients have not called, and that's because they understand the market, meaning they understand why they're invested in the investments that they have chosen or we have chosen, and the risk expectations, meaning if you are going into a equity-based product, meaning stocks, that you understand the risk. So that when you choose an investment and put that into your financial plan, you understand that the equity portion, meaning the stock portion, is going to have more risk than the fixed income portion. So in good times, you're going to accelerate with the market much more quickly than if you were in fixed income, but also the reverse in times like these.
Right. Okay, and I noticed something that you said about stocks that they choose or you choose with them. And that stood out to me because I recall last week one of the things that you instructed us about when meeting with and deciding on a financial planner is you don't want someone who's going to choose everything for you. You want someone who's going to listen to you.
Exactly.
So I just want to point that out again. Okay, let's see if anyone on the call has a question. And if you do, you have to push *6 and we'll get started this way. And then if no one has questions, I'll go with the ones that we've gotten in the forum community. Okay, let's get started then. Some of the questions, it appears as though not everyone has a financial planner, and that's a lot of baby boomers. So some of the questions had to do with what is the best way to go about getting a financial planner, and I think you addressed that some last week. Do you want to talk about that just a little bit?
Sure. The best way, I would say, to get a financial planner is for you to assess what you're looking for. You would want to, outline your objectives. And first, for example, are you looking to invest with someone who will help you and put you into an investment program, or are you looking to kind of just wing it and start trading stocks? I mean, there are all types of individuals out there. Everyone has a different investment policy of their own. So it's important for you to identify what are you looking for. Are you looking for an advisor who is going to advise you on a fee-based basis, meaning you're willing to pay a fee, or do you want to do just the commission structure, which is more traditional structure? And there's pros and cons to each. And then I would, once you understand really what you're looking for, forget what anyone is telling you. Forget the recommendations of friends and family. What is most important to you? What are you looking to accomplish, and what ways are you looking to accomplish it? And then from there, you want to understand the business of the financial advisor that you would be interviewing. For example, is that individual a transactional advisor, that they are not on a fee-based system and they buy and sell? There's pros and cons to that aspect. With commissions, you're not constantly paying a fee, but however, you have to, some clients will wonder and say, is this what's best for me? Because every time that a recommendation is made, my advisor is being paid. And if the advice doesn't work out, then I'm the only one that loses. Where in a fee-based relationship, you may pay a flat fee, whatever the fee is, usually it's somewhere between 1% and 3%, and you are paying that flat fee, and if the advisor is making recommendations, it's in everyone's best interest to have the account grow, because as your account grows, the 1% off of the number will also grow. So everyone's really sitting on the same side of the table. You also want to look for, you know, do you want an advisor in a large firm or a small firm? Well, there's pros and cons to each. Small firms are going to have maybe someone that's local to you in your neighborhood. The larger firms are may not be as convenient, but they certainly have a lot of backing if something does not go right in your account, as opposed to a smaller firm with an individual that may not have all the supplemental insurance that the larger firm has. So those are some of the things that I would start with. You know, again, it's really assessing your needs and what you're looking for, and then marrying that up with the practice of the advisor that you're interviewing. And, of course, I know a lot of people have the, you know, including myself, the alphabet soup of titles, but it's important, too, to understand those titles. For example, if someone has a CRPS title, that's a Certified Retirement Plans Specialist. So that individual may deal with corporate plans. That may not be as best suited for you as someone who's a financial planning specialist or a certified financial planner or even a CRPC, which is what I am, a certified retirement planning counselor. So my title is that I am certified to work with people that are retiring as opposed to, you know, other titles that are out there involved with trading.
Interesting. Okay. And so really, I'm sure a lot of this information you can find online.
Sure.
You know, and maybe print some things and really do your homework before you pick up the phone and make a call. You know, one question that I thought was interesting is, do you need a certain amount of money to work with a financial planner?
Well, that's an interesting question. Financial planners work different ways. There are some financial planners that, and I had a client who had told me about a neighbor who just went and paid $3,000 for a financial plan. It's a lot of money.
Okay.
We have financial plans here, as most firms, that we do not charge our clients for, because we look at as we're being paid a fee, and I'm a fee-based advisor, we're being paid a fee, to work with our clients and to be an advisor to them. And so part of that is going to be working with them on a financial plan. Mm-hmm. And so we do not charge an additional fee. However, there are certain limitations where firms will put restrictions on accounts saying, for example, there might be a firm that says, you know, anything under $250,000, the advisor won't get paid on. So it's not really advantageous to have that relationship formed if the advisor feels they're working with someone and they're not able to receive any compensation for that. That's doing a job that you're not receiving compensation. So really it would depend, I think, on and I believe that the advisor would tell you that from the beginning, if that's a good relationship or not. And in those cases, for example, small accounts where you're just starting off, you really don't have a lot to work with, and maybe starting off with an American Funds or a Putnam or something like that, and just starting up with their dollar cost averaging, that's a great place to get started where you're not inundated with a lot of fees. The larger firms are going to be more advantageous for larger clients, larger being speculative as far as for this conversation as far as amounts, for someone who might have a lot of different strengths, meaning they have an investment account, they've got a retirement account, and when you piece all of that together and you become a pretty substantial client, you would be surprised on the discounts that are given across the board. You know, they might not have any account maintenance fees, wire transfer fees, debit card fees. I mean, all of that is waived. So, and when you do interview with the different firms, they will tell you those breakpoints. They might say, you know, for someone who's a $500,000 client, you will have all of this, and we won't charge you a dime for any of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of the smaller accounts may not receive that services, so they may go to an advisor that's going to charge them a flat fee for a financial plan. So there's a lot, there's so much that you really need to research. And again, I think once you go through what is important for you, what are you looking to accomplish when you meet up with your financial advisor? Once you fully understand or you partially understand or have a good guideline, a good infrastructure to start with,
mm-hmm.
and then move from there and then find a good fit with a firm that is a good fit for you and your financial situation.
Okay, well, let's say someone's just retired and they have $100,000 in their retirement or $200,000, but they don't have the $250,000.
Okay.
So what would your recommendation be? Is it ever smart to just invest on your own and not have a financial planner? Or is it really wise to use someone who's a professional?
I would definitely use someone who is a professional.
Mm-hmm.
I see more often than not people making decisions based on emotions and market volatility as opposed to their plan. For example, and people are scared. If the market was at 14,000 in October of 2007 and now it's 7,600 when it started busting through that 7,000 number, people were scared. And even if they were, you know, 2 or 3 years from retirement, some of them were thinking they should go to cash. Well, what would have
mm-hmm.
happened then? You would have been sitting at cash in, you know, the mid-sixes, and now you have a 1,100-point gain, and you missed out. So
right.
You've locked out your 20%. So, you know, when it comes to money, the emotions usually override logical decision-making, and that's where the advisor really comes in and helps.
Mm-hmm.
To point out things that someone may not think of. And one of those things might be the client saying, well, I'm going to retire in 3 years. Well, if you're a female and you retire, your life expectancy is 81 years old as an average. So if you're 65, you don't need a lump sum of cash the day that you retire. You still need your money to grow. So you still need to be exposed to some equities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more of an education process, and I find that most of my clients, that's what we spend a lot of time on, is education.
Mm-hmm.
Is when we sit down for the meetings, it's understanding the markets, understanding the investments, and the education, because that's when people do not seem to make the best investment decisions, is when they don't have the knowledge, and the fear and greed drive the investment reactions, if that helps.
Right. Okay, well, what can a client expect from a financial planner? Like, how often should you hear from them? Do you just get your statements every month and assume everything's fine, you know, unless there's a big change or you see a big drop or whatever, or you hear a hot tip? I mean, how often do you communicate with your clients?
That's something that is personalized, and mm-hmm. I would say some people like to hear from their advisor once a month. Some people really once a quarter. Some people twice a year. And that's something, again, that really should be communicated when you're making that list.
So you're willing to do whatever. Some people just invest their money and assume everything's fine and you're taking care of it and you might, you know, just touch base with them twice a year and that's fine. But other people like to maybe be more active, switch things around, you know, buy and sell and just take more chances. And I imagine that's the type of client you would be in touch with more often.
That is the type of client that I would be in touch with more often, but I would say the majority of my clients are not that type of client.
Right, okay.
Because those clients are going to be more trading clients, and the clients that like to trade, I set up a separate account for them, and just we allocate a number that makes sense, and then they trade on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think that, you know, if a financial planner is exactly that, you're
right.
A planner. You're helping the client manage their comprehensive wealth. You're making the investment decisions, but you're not a trader. People that are a trader, I feel like as a financial advisor, I'm not qualified to be a trader.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that the people that are in management for mutual funds, let me clarify that, managed account or mutual funds, that would be the analysts that work for the mutual fund company and select the stocks that are actually in the mutual fund. All they do is they watch stocks, they talk to the companies, they monitor the management of the companies, they look at new products coming out, and they evaluate whether or not that company is a good company,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, determining that determines whether or not that stock would continue to be in the portfolio. If a financial planner is doing that, I don't know how they would have time to do their job.
Okay, so that's really not their job.
It's not really their job, but there are certainly planners that will buy and sell stocks.
Okay.
And again, that's my philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel, you know, if we have mutual funds out there and we have managed accounts, which is the next level of a mutual fund, which is more used by, for example, large pension plans of corporations, then those individuals are much more qualified because that's all they do. They don't have clients to talk to.
Right.
They don't have people coming in and talking about a financial plan and helping them, you know, look at what asset allocation makes most sense, running retirement income analysis. How can you do all of that and manage tax? I just couldn't manage it on my plate.
Okay, gotcha. Well, somebody commented in the forums that, you know, how can you have a financial plan with everything changing so quickly? You know, how do you change with the times, or do you, you know, it seems like most people are saying really stick and do what you're doing. So what do you recommend as far as boomers who are really looking at retirement or who have retired, you know, what is the best thing to do? I mean, some people are saying now's the time, you know, to buy. Now's the time to just sit still and just stay with what you have, but, you know, don't sell, et cetera. What are you recommending this week?
This week, I am recommending for everyone to do very similarly what I did to my clients, and that is to, again, everyone has changed, their net worth has changed drastically, is to take a step back and look at your net worth and see where you are and what you may need to do going forward. For example, if you're retired and you were used to having market returns of 10% and taking that 10% as income, well, if you were taking, I'm just going to use round numbers, if you were taking 10% of $1 million, that's providing you a $100,000 income. If your investments now are at $600,000, your 10% is going to be $60,000.
Mm-hmm.
So reevaluating where the numbers fall and what you need to do going forward. And I will tell you that a lot of retirees have been told that, you know, they could safely take 7% or so out of their account. And today, when we have, this year, when the retirement numbers have been rerun, that number's dropped to 4%.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it has to do with just information received from Social Security and other sources. The life expectancies have risen, the market's declined, and people have just across the board been really spending more than they should have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think everything together is piled up. And so it's a good time to step back and take a look at everything and see what you have to work with. And one of the suggestions that we do make to clients is to do a comprehensive plan, including everything. And that's one of the benefits of consolidation, consolidating accounts where we may have a 401k somewhere that was left from a couple years ago, or we may have a couple IRA accounts at various banks.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing that all in to see what the net worth picture looks like, and then running a retirement income analysis to see what those investments will generate. And at this time, too, we can look at the income analysis and say, well, maybe if we move a little bit of this, let's just say maybe it's equities over to fixed income, that might stabilize the portfolio going forward. However, that's going to adjust the income because equities tend to have higher returns than fixed income. So showing the client the pros and cons of any movement that we would make in the portfolio, but also using all of the resources to show them what they do have and where they what they're working with at this time.
Wow, there's so much to consider, isn't there?
There's a lot to consider. There's no doubt about that.
But
especially women. Women are, you know, and it's important really for women to, especially during this time, whatever age they are, to receive as much information and education as they can. The average widow, the average age of a widow here in the States is 55 years old.
Wow.
And, yes.
I didn't know that. That's young.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if their life expectancy is 81, of course, these are just the average, you're looking at, you know, 25-plus years managing money. And if you're not savvy on how to do it, it could be problematic.
Right, right. So education is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what if your CPA offers investments Is there any advantage or disadvantage to an advisory relationship?
A CPA typically can hold what's called a Series 6 license. Mm-hmm. That gives them the ability to offer mutual funds, but not stocks or other investments. And a lot of times they can offer that as an ancillary to their business. For example, if you're working with a small business owner that you're doing taxes for, and they might say, well, you know, you could put away 25% of your income and we could put that in a SEP account for you, and that's going to generate X amount of tax incentive for you. It's a great idea. The one thing that I would caution is that they are certified public accountants.
Mm-hmm.
They are not certified financial planners,
mm-hmm.
and therefore they might not be giving full attention to one task or the other. It's very hard to do both. And if you like your CPA, then you may not also want to muddy the relationship by the investments as well, because if the investments don't work out and you're not happy with that, it's hard to continue a relationship as a CPA. If you follow.
Okay, so basically they should be doing one or the other, but they really shouldn't be doing both.
They shouldn't be, and for your benefit, if, let's just say, for example, they put you in an asset allocation that really wasn't quite right for you with your investment,
mm-hmm.
and you went to get a second opinion and you find out, you know what, this hasn't really worked out, I feel like this was too aggressive, you may be upset and may not want to work with that individual as your accountant now as well.
Right.
So not only do you want to not work with him for your investments, but you're also mad and you don't want to work with him for your accounting.
Right.
So I just find it always good to separate those relationships. And if you have someone that you really like as an accountant, then you should keep that individual. But you may want to look for an expert in the financial field to handle your finances and not as an ancillary product with your CPA.
Okay. Okay, so keep those relationships separate.
Absolutely.
Okay, this is about diversification. Okay, let's see. This person says, I put my money with a few different advisors, invest on my own, and have a few retirement accounts from past jobs. Is this a good idea?
And I would say the typical individual is going to say, yes, it's a great idea because I'm diversified. I've got a little bit of money everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the important points that I want to point out to especially women that may not know this, because I think a lot of people are in the situation where they, you know, they might have $100,000 in a bank and they go to the next bank and put in $100,000 mm-hmm. to get the FDIC insurance coverage at that time. Of course, it's raised since then. Is they may also say, well, I'm going to also diversify my investments. The problem is when you do that, you may have overlapped a lot of your investments without knowing that,
mm-hmm.
and you're not really working with an advisor that's going to take a comprehensive look at everything that you have and say, okay, here's what we have. We've got X amount in investments, and this is what, again, you can look forward to at retirement, or make some changes based on everything that you have. When you have assets spread all over the place, there's really no one monitoring those.
Okay, so it's really a good, I mean, it's not a bad idea, but you should have someone who sees the whole picture and understands the whole picture.
Absolutely.
Okay, all right.
Absolutely.
All right, that's pretty straightforward. Okay, now here's a question that has to do with helping children and grandchildren, okay?
Okay.
Some boomers still have children in college. Some have grandchildren that they would like to help with their education. What is the best way to help a child or grandchild with college, buying a house, or buying a car, or some significant gift? Okay, the question is it best when it comes to education for your grandchild to do student loans?
Mm-hmm.
And help them pay them back, have them take the loans in their own name and help them pay them back? Or does it make more sense for you to take a portion of money and gift it to them? Or is there anything, you know, with regards to any of this, gifting and helping younger generations when it comes to taking money out of your retirement? I mean, like, you may have enough money, but what's the best way to go about it?
I would say one of the really one of the popular vehicles today is the 529 college savings plan.
Good.
The 529 college savings plan is a great vehicle in the fact that you do have the gifting ability there. So you can gift $12,000, put it into the 529 plan, and it actually still remains in your name, meaning that you still have control over it. The child is the beneficiary. So, you know, whatever you want to work out with the child from that point on as far as, you know, a loan maybe, they might want to take out some supplemental loan through one of the many loans that are student loans that are available, and you still want to help them, this is an excellent way to help them. In the event, for example, that the child that you have designated as a beneficiary decides not to continue college or decides that they never want to go to college, then you can actually change the name of the beneficiary with no tax consequences whatsoever to someone else. So if you have two grandchildren or you have a grandchildren on each side of the family, you can actually change the name, the beneficiary, to another grandchild or child or cousin or even back to yourself as long as you use it for higher education.
Okay, but it has to be used for higher education, the 529 college savings.
It does. It does. But, you know, it can be used at a community college.
Mm-hmm.
It can be used to take a computer course or other courses that they offer. So the 529 plan also covers college-related expenses, which
okay.
can really run the gamut. And there's a lot of gray areas on what they actually cover. Some of the questions have been, well, does that cover a car for my child to go to college? No. No, that does not cover the car. But would it cover a computer for a computer class? Well, it's a necessary item, so yes.
Okay.
And you can certainly see the benefit to that. But the 529 plan is what I would recommend.
Okay. What? Let's say someone hasn't put that in action in prior years.
Mm-hmm.
Is it best for children, for the kids to take out the loans and our generation to help them pay them back? Or does it make more sense to just gift them, you know, the money and pay the tuition and do it that way? I guess you have to just look at what the percentage is of, you know, finance charges and all that stuff.
You do, and you also have to look at when they're – some of the student loans, they're going to look at the parents' assets. They'll look at the child's assets
mm-hmm.
to see if they qualify and how much they qualify for. So it's really going to be much more of an individualized application process.
Okay. Okay. Okay, before I keep going on with these questions that we have, does anybody have a question they want to ask? If so, you have to push *6 so we can hear you. Hello? Oh, I thought somebody was going to ask a question. Okay, let's move on to something that is important in the boomer generation, and that is inheritance. Now, this is interesting because I know when I started, you know, learning about the boomer generation, really educating myself about our issues, it was being said, and this was like 6 years ago, that we were really set to inherit quite a bit of money from our parents' generation. But from things that I'm reading now, it's changing because our parents' generation is living longer. They're spending down their money. They're losing their money in investments, et cetera. But the question is, if someone inherits a large sum of money, and who knows what large is, but, you know, a good deal of money, where is the best place to put it right now? Like, what would you recommend?
Well, I would recommend, and you know, it really all evolves around, and I feel like I've repeated this at length, it really all revolves around that financial plan.
Okay.
And looking at, you know, what your debts are, what your investments are, does it make sense to maybe get rid of some debts that you're paying maybe an exorbitant credit card rate of 18%, or does it mean it's better to put it into the market when market is at 1996 prices? Does it look, you know, that you'll even need that money? Maybe there's some sort of tax-deferred vehicle that we could look at. Maybe if you're all set and you really don't need to worry about any of that, maybe the best thing to do, because obviously it's not qualified money, meaning it's not retirement money, so it is taxable to you every year at this point on any gains that you have. Maybe you just Want to look at municipal bonds where it's triple tax-free income if you choose a state bond. So there's lots of different avenues that you could look at. But it really goes back to the simple question as, you know, my financial situation is going to be different than my neighbor's financial situation and their child's. Everyone has a different picture. And I think that you really need to, if you were to inherit money, what is your outstanding picture? What do you have? What do you owe? Mm-hmm. And go from there.
Mm-hmm. That's really important. So, I mean, some boomers are still paying off homes. Mm-hmm. You know, so does it make more sense to use the money to pay down the mortgage, or does it make, you know, more sense to pay it off or whatever? So you have to look at the whole picture.
Exactly. And I hate to go back, but I just wanted to also clarify when you were asking about a financial planner and how they make money. There was one point that I did not touch on, and that is mutual funds. All mutual funds do collect a fee from their client, whether they're an A share, a B share, a C share, they all have a fee that is internally collected from the returns. So, for example, you know, if the fund returns 10%, the client may see less on their statement, depending upon what share class they're in. And that fee, if you went to say to American Funds directly and called up 1-800-AMERICAN-FUNDS and purchased a mutual fund through American Funds, you would be paying the same fee as if you went direct to a financial advisor. So a lot of financial advisors and the firms, independents and large firms, they all do collect a fee for many of the share classes. And you could work with a financial advisor by having a substantial amount of mutual funds without paying a flat fee on top of that, because the mutual fund company does actually pay the firm a fee or the independent a fee.
Ah, I see. Okay.
So that's very advantageous to both the client and the advisor in the fact that if I didn't know any better, you know, I would think, well, it's not going to cost me as much to call direct, so I'm going to buy my mutual fund through 1-800 mutual fund company. Mm-hmm. And you can have the same fund and pay no more on many of the funds, and we have over 8,000, so I'm sure many other firms do as well, by working with a financial advisor and getting the fund through the financial advisor. And this way, you do have an advisor with no additional cost to you, and you now have a direct dial instead of calling 1-800 when you need something done, and you have the ability to work with someone about your personal financial situation.
That's really interesting to learn. That's good information.
And I almost forgot to point that out, but that is an alternative as well, and a lot of people don't know about that.
Right. Okay, mm-hmm. Good. All right. Anything else about inheritance that we should know?
There is probably much more about inheritance that you should know, and I would think that would be a great question to ask an estate planning attorney.
Yeah, okay.
Or a tax advisor.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. The accountant would know about how the taxes may be changing under this administration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about renewable energy stocks. Someone in the forums asked, is this a good time to buy them?
I think that's a double-edged sword.
Okay.
Is it a good time to buy them? I think that I think they are very low. I think it's a good time to get in at the ground level. I do think that there's a lot of potential for them.
Mm-hmm.
But the risk now is the funding in this economic environment that we have. A lot of them are ready to go, and the funding just isn't there.
Hmm.
So are they sustainable? How large are the companies, so on and so forth. But I do know that Obama's plan for 2012, he's expecting or hoping that 10% of all electricity will be coming from renewable energy sources. So he's laid out the plan to really ramp up and try to do a more greener environment, greener, cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, now I think there's more issues on the table going to be receiving funds in this immediate sense, obviously, as, you know, we're hearing now about the auto industry.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just don't know if the energy stocks will come to fruition in the next 2 years or 5 years, but I do think, yes, it's a good time to get in, and I also think that you have to have, again, that expectation of a longer time horizon that you then may be expected.
Okay. All right. I think that's an interesting question and a really good answer. Because every time you turn around, it's something is about going green. So you would think that, you know, absolutely. But then I guess, you know, things can change and not always fall out the way we think they're going to fall out. So.
And that being said, with the renewable energy stocks, mm-hmm. another source that you may want to look towards is socially responsible funds, because they almost go hand in hand.
Okay, and can you explain that?
Socially responsible funds, they are going to be funds that are socially responsible, meaning that they're not causing harm to the environment, as well as they will eliminate tobacco. Mm-hmm. Most of them will eliminate alcohol. So anything that's on the sin stock list, they'll try to remove.
Okay.
So socially responsible, you know, good for the environment, good for the individual, you know, again, getting rid of a lot of the what we call sin stocks. So they're not going to have anything that's adverse to the individual or the environment.
Gotcha. Great point. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. We have about 15 minutes, and we haven't talked about annuities.
Mm-hmm.
Explain what annuities are and how we know if an annuity is right for us.
Okay. An annuity has changed over the years, mm-hmm. From the time that they were first offered. They used to be something where the insurance, you would put money into an insurance company, it would give, say, a guaranteed rate, and then you would start collecting an income, and at the time that you would pass away, in many cases, the insurance company would then just keep the rest of the income. That's the long and short of it.
Okay.
In many of the cases, not in all of the cases, but that's what some of them did, which gave annuities a bad name. And I don't know a lot about the annuities from 20, 30 years ago, but I do know about them today,
mm-hmm.
so I'll tell you about them today. Today, the annuities are used in a variety of ways. The people that I find most benefit from the annuities are the people that have a certain dollar amount and they know what rate they want to collect off of that amount. Say, for example, someone has $1.5 million and they've got $1 million that they would have invested in bonds. Maybe the bonds yield 4%, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest they've allocated out for their slush fund, and it's they're never going to touch the bonds again. They just want 4%. Many times they can invest in the annuity as an alternative fixed income investment,
mm-hmm.
and they can get a higher rate, higher than the 4%. It's also going to have some nice death benefits for their children, some living benefits, and I'll back up because I know I'm just kind of spilling them out. For example, there's fixed annuities and there's variable annuities. The variable annuities are nothing more than mutual funds with an insurance wrapper around them. So,
okay.
For example, if you had $100,000 sitting in mutual funds in your IRA account and they went to 60, you're looking at a 40% loss.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to start an income stream off of that money, you're obviously going to have a lot lower base when you start your income stream.
Mm-hmm.
What the variable annuity will do, if you choose a living benefit rider, is they might say, I'm going to accept your $100,000 and I'm going to give you a 6% compound every year. And when you're ready to start withdrawing, we can take 6% off of the number that the contract has ended up at. For example, if you put $100,000 in and it compounded at 6%, and let's say by the time you started to take the money out, the 6% compound was up to $200,000. Well, your $6,000 now for income has turned into $12,000.
Mm-hmm.
So $12,000 you would be guaranteed going forward, and if the market, and then they're also tied to the mutual fund value. So if the mutual funds went up in value, then you would actually have the ability to override that $200,000 and go to the next level for an income-driven lock-in. So it's got a lot of downside protection with some unlimited upside too with the market, which a lot of people do. Like, the problem with the annuity, or the downside to the annuity, is that once you get into a contract like that, it gives you the income that you may be looking for, but if you need additional funds and you break the limits that they do allow you for taking out money, then a lot of those guarantees will diminish.
And are there fees for that?
The annuities are going to be more expensive than a mutual fund because they're mutual funds with an insurance wrapper on that.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the way that, to make it very easy to understand, it is guaranteeing your money, more or less saying, when you retire, I know that you have $100,000 today, and if you want to make sure that you still have your $100,000 3 years from now, we're going to guarantee that you have that to start off as a base.
Okay.
In times like these,
mm-hmm.
It wasn't such a bad idea.
Right, right.
exactly.
Exactly.
If you went down 50% and you were sitting in on a $500,000 retirement and now it's at 250, most people are worried about that.
Right.
People in the annuity are thinking, you know what, I'm starting off at $500,000 and that's my income stream. So, again, it's a good, I think, replacement for fixed income where people think, okay, I'm not going to touch that portion of my money. I just need an income of X amount of dollars. That will provide that.
Okay.
Is there, you know, and you want to look for something with a good credit rating. There are a million and one of these annuity companies out there, and not all of them have very good credit ratings.
Okay, and that's something that the financial planner would do for you. They can recommend the ones with good.
And I would absolutely go to a financial planner. It was very interesting. I had a client the other day who was, she's in her 70s, and she was leaving the grocery store, and she had someone approach her about annuity and said that she was guaranteed to get 11% every year. And, of course, she was intrigued. I mean,
mm-hmm.
And it's amazing where people are looking, you know, people are just looking for answers now and just looking for anything. And so she's like, I think that sounds kind of high. And I said, oh, that's definitely high. And then, you know, we started to research it, and we answered all of her questions. But, you know, for someone who doesn't have anyone and they're telling 11% in
mm-hmm.
today's economy,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's very, very tempting.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of times it's not explained to them that well, that sure, we'll give you 11%, but you're going to be paying 4%. And here are all your restrictions, and you can't get out till the next 17 years. So,
wow, there's
yeah.
so many complications and so many things to consider. That's why I just think it's so important for people to have financial planners, because
oh.
you're the experts. Just like many of us are experts in other fields, you're the experts in the field of planning and money and securing a safe financial future. And there's just so much behind what meets the eye, you know? So
you're absolutely right. And it's very difficult even to get as much information out on a single call because there are so many different directions. I mean, we could spend 3 hours talking about nothing more than annuity differences or, you know, time talking about the differences in financial planners, fee-based commissions, mutual fund, revenue sharing agreements. You know, there's just so many things to discuss, so, you know, I hope we hit a lot of the highlights today.
Yes, between last week and this week, because last week we got into, gosh, what did we do? We did some reverse mortgages
mm-hmm.
and long-term care. We talked about 401ks. Yeah, so I think between last week and this week, we really covered quite a bit of ground. Is there anything else you want to add? Because we're running out of time, and I want to make sure we have time for you to give your name and your web address and tell us about some of the articles you have on your site that might be give us more information.
Well, I have a lot on my site. My site is under www.fa.smithbarney. That's smithbarney.com/Jennifer, JenNinfer, Campion, C-A-M-P-I-O-N. And you'll find a lot of articles, and there's some related to boomers in there. You'll also, if the market goes up or down 100 points, there's a link that will go to an article that explains why the market was up or down over 100 points. So that's nice to know. There's a lot of information on that site. We do have some upcoming seminars that we'll be posting shortly. So that will also be on there. And I think that that's probably about it. We, you know, at this point, we would be more than happy to assist any of the clients that you have, Dotsie. Mm-hmm. If they would like a financial plan, we could certainly give them a mini financial plan for them to start as a starting point.
Would you repeat that website again, please?
Sure. It is www.fa.smith, and that's smithbarney.com/jenniferciamp.
Okay, and those for it's www.f as in Frank, A as in Anthony, F A. And the other thing you can do is Google Jennifer Campion, J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R-C-A-M-P-I-O-N, and that pretty much takes you, one of the first Google sites is that Smith Barney address, isn't it, Jennifer?
I believe it is.
Yeah, it is. If not, it's one of the first few. So, okay, I'm just trying to think if there's anything else. We covered all of the questions, and So I think that's about it. I have been on Jennifer's site, and the articles are very good, and many of them are directed directly at baby boomers because Jennifer is used to working with baby boomers. And the other thing I might add is that she also has quite a clientele of women. And I know from knowing Jennifer in the Baltimore community that she is involved in women's organizations and really supports, you know, educating women about financial matters. So anything else you want to share, Jennifer?
No, I just went out online myself and Googled my name, and I was the first site that popped up. So, yes, you can find it just by Googling my name.
Okay,
and,
good.
And the feature report is actually retirement planning requires trade-offs. Boomers need to balance future and current needs, which I think we talked a lot about on the phone today.
Right.
Is, again, you know, really just getting all the information together.
Mm-hmm.
And even life insurance policies, you would be surprised of all of the access that you have to various retirement vehicles when you get everything together. And how everything can come together once it's pieced together into, you know, make that complete pie and then start working with that pie to see really where you can go between now, which is, I would say, at the pretty bottom of the market, if not the bottom, moving forward and really repositioning everything that you do have so that you've made it most effective for your future without missing the beat that you really have at this point. To work with and restructure. The campaign that we are doing is now repair and rebuild.
Okay. Now, does anybody have a question before we hang up? If so, let's see, push star 6, or if you're not muted, go ahead and ask. Okay, I think we covered a lot of ground, and I really appreciate it. We will take this teleseminar, and we'll be sending the audio to, we'll place it in our forums. We'll also send it to the people who signed up for the call, and all the members of the association will also get it. And then we also have these transcribed so that a PDF is available. So if women don't want to sit and listen, they can print it and read it at their convenience. So, Jennifer, I just want to thank you so much for all the valuable information you shared.
Sure, Dottie.
And thanks for being on the call. Have a great day.
Great. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.